Hello and welcome to the Walk Podcast. My name's David Tiltman, and today we are looking at an emerging effectiveness topic, the contribution of marketing to a company's stock valuation. Now, this isn't a topic that receives a lot of attention. We talk about brand equity, pricing power, long-term sales performance, all of which you would expect would contribute towards stock market performance. But that link is rarely formally made. So I've been really interested to see a few things in the last few months that have started to address this question. Now, we've got three guests today who have all recently looked at this topic. First up, we have Shubha Srinivasan and Mike Hansons. In March, they published a paper called The Impact of Advertising on a Company's Stock Price on the website of the Journal of Advertising Research. Shubha is the Adele and Norman Baron Professor of Marketing at Boston University's Questrom School of Business. And Mike is Distinguished Research Professor of Marketing at the UCLA Anderson School of Management. Now, joining them, we have Ian Whittaker, an equity research analyst in London for over 20 years and managing director of Liberty Sky Advisors. And last year, Ian worked with the IPA here in London on research into the attitudes of equity analysts to marketing. So we've got a really good set of guests to address this topic. And I'm going to get straight into it. I'm going to start by looking at this topic as a whole, and I've said in the introduction, it feels like an area that's under-researched. Why do we think that is? Mike, why don't you kick us off there?
Yes, well, in my view, David, and first of all, I agree with your premise that it is under-researched, but it has to do with increasing amounts of specialization that we see both in our firms and also in academia, quite frankly. So, for example, in the world of marketing, we distinguish between sales and advertising. Within advertising, we now specialize into digital advertising and mobile phone advertising, etc. We see more and more specialties develop. And as a result, we focus on just the area of the specialization, and we don't build that many bridges across areas. And the same thing is happening in academia. We have marketing professors like me and Professor Srinivasan, and we do marketing. We rarely talk about finance. And then we have finance professors, and they frankly don't talk about marketing. And so we're building these silos, but we're really forgetting or underappreciating the opportunity to build bridges and build common frameworks for understanding that are in the best interest of our knowledge and the quality of our practice.
And Ian, you're in, you know, the slightly unusual position of being an equity analyst that has a foot in the financial world and a foot in the marketing world. What's your take on it? Do you agree it's a sort of area that's been not looked at enough?
Absolutely. I think when we did the IPA survey last year, one of the core drivers behind that was there was a perception of how marketing was viewed by investors, but actually that wasn't really backed up by much in the way of evidence. And so sort of what did as part of that survey was interview 200 analysts and investors who worked in the financial markets to take their views on what was happening in marketing. And what we found, sort of major surprise to perhaps some people, was that when it came to the analysts, they actually rated the strength of brand and marketing as being the most important factor when they were thinking about public companies and how important that feature was to their appraisal and analysis. And that was above leadership quality, was above reported profit, was above employee experience and ESG and so forth. I think one thing that perhaps has significantly raised the interest in this topic over the past 2 years is what I like to call a vast and planned experiment in showing the effectiveness of brand advertising and in particular, and also marketing. And what I mean by that is, if you look at what has happened over that time frame, many companies, if you go back 2 years ago, sort of were really, really concerned about the impact of rapidly rising inflation on their profits. Because what they thought was, well, we look at our price elasticity models, and what they're telling us is if we try to put anything like this through to the consumer, then we would see massive drops off them in volumes. And what actually happened was, you know, they were sort of surprised by how much they're able to put through those price increases. And so they thought, okay, let's try. We can get some more. And each time they did so, what they realized was the consumer was more willing to accept those price increases than first thought. And when actually they went back and looked at why this was the case, yet if you listen to the company conference calls and what company management CEOs and CFOs talk about, yeah, overwhelmingly the factor they cite as the reason why they were able to get such significant price increases through, and much more sort of much greater than he anticipated, was the strength of the brand. That was the one factor that overwhelmingly companies pointed to in terms of the key determining factor. And I think what that has made people realize, particularly at the company management level, is that the strength of brand does actually count. And this is where it becomes seen more as an investment rather than a cost.
Great. Well, we're going to go into that sort of IPA research you mentioned in a little bit more detail later in the podcast. But I'm going to start by looking at this paper that appeared in the Journal of Advertising Research. So, Mike, tell me a little bit about the background to the paper. Why did you decide to investigate this area, and how did you sort of approach it?
Yes, indeed. So this happened the first half of this century, where Subhash Srinivasan and myself and some others started to look at the possibility of integrating the finance and the marketing field. And what we really did at the time is launch a research effort, that was the Marketing Science Institute, and provide some funding and just have scholars from all over the world contribute scientific articles, which were then very carefully scientifically vetted. And some 15 years later or so, bringing it up to, let's say, the early 20s, we had about 250 of these articles just on the relationship between advertising and firm value. And incidentally, there's more than advertising, of course, but I'm focusing on advertising here. And so we did, Shubha and I, did a very careful analysis of, great, we've got all these scientific articles. What have we learned from that about the possible relationship between advertising and firm value?
Okay, let's actually dive into the paper. So we will provide a link in the show notes, and it is on walk.com as well. When people read it, I think one thing that's really interesting is the way the paper breaks down the influence of advertising, and we're talking about advertising in particular here, onto stock market valuation, and it calls it indirect signaling and brand assets. So Shubha, talk to me a little bit about those three, what they are, how they contribute.
Thank you, David. Happy to do that and happy to be here. You're absolutely right. We talk about the indirect effect versus the direct effect. The indirect effect is really the idea that advertising drives sales, which leads to increased profits. And to the extent that investors are surprised by these increased profits, that might impact stock price. So this is the classic route through the sales and what we refer to as market-based brand equity. An example of this is iPhone. Let's say Apple increases the advertising of the iPhone and more consumers run in to buy the iPhone. Investors may be surprised with the increase in sales attributed to the increase in advertising, and that in turn drives up stock prices. So this is the idea of the indirect effect. The direct effect is something that happens directly, where advertising influences the stock price. And the direct effect is what we might call the mindset route, where it is more slow moving, it's longer term in nature, and the results are not directly observable. So an example of the direct effect might be that advertising creates an asset, which is brands. And I'm heartened by the fact that Ian said analysts really get this. They understand that brands matter. And that is what the direct effect alludes to, which is the effect through the brand asset. And in this paper with Mike Hansen's in the Journal of Advertising Research, we argue that there are two mechanisms by which the direct effect can operate. The first mechanism is the signaling effect, where the idea is investors and managers don't have the same information set. And so advertising provides information to the investors as a signal. So an example of this might be a pharma product that has FDA approval, and managers might increase the direct-to-consumer advertising. This advertising is not only targeted at patients who might go and demand from the clinicians that they want to use this product, but it's also signaling to the investors that management think that there is likely to be an improvement in future earnings, and investors react to this, and we might see an increase in stock price. The direct effect can also operate directly through creating brand assets. So here's the classic case of the marketers like Coca-Cola or Apple or Nike. Consistent, strong advertising that builds brands. And going back to Ian's point about brands being the drivers of price premiums, they're also the drivers of brand loyalty. And that might then affect stock prices. So the direct effect through brand assets could also be negative. For example, Tesla is now price promoting a lot, and investors might think that is eroding their brand equity, and you might see a decline in stock price because investors think there is some uncertainty about future earnings, which is why Tesla is promoting their product a lot. So these are the three routes that we talk about. The paper has the details and more examples on how these different routes operate.
So I really like that sort of division. I think what's interesting is the one we probably focus most on within the actual practitioner marketing world is what you've called an indirect effect, which is your goal is to increase sales, increase profits, and if you do that ahead of what is expected, then you mm-hmm. might have some impact on stock price. And actually, there are two other really important impacts, which are, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, signaling in terms of that confidence, that sort of, you used to call it a mindset approach to investors, that you have confidence in your product, you're backing it. And then the brand piece, which I know we'll come on and talk about this with Ian later, is really interesting as well. It's like that sort of asset. It's like an intangible asset that you're building mm-hmm. over time. So that's really nice. And I know you went further in the paper and started to break down brand equity again into three different types. So talk me through those as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. So we really talk about brand equity as coming from sort of building consumer mindsets, which we call customer-based brand equity. So this is the idea that advertising sort of moves consumers along from awareness to consideration to preference, and eventually affects revenues and cash flows, and investors react to that. So that's sort of the classic route, which might build assets like customer retention, customer equity, and so on. The second route is what we see directly through the, or what we see through the indirect effects, the market-based brand equity, where you see an impact on revenues and cash flows, and that we call market-based brand equity because it translates into performance in the product marketplace. And the third one is, again, through the direct route, and we call that financial-based brand equity. So, for example, when you see companies like Interbrand or Brand Finance focusing on the financial value of the firm that arises through the intangible asset creation, those are really what we refer to as financial-based brand equity, coming through the financial performance, again, intrinsically through the intangible brand asset creation. So these three sources of brand equity actually map on quite well to sort of the three routes that we talked about through the indirect and the direct. So there is a sort of a way to connect the two.
Which of these has the biggest impact on stock market valuation? Talk to me a little bit about what you've found over the years.
That is a really important question, I believe, because that's something that would really shed light on what do we need to be doing to move the needle on brand assets and ultimately on stock prices. So there, as Mike was saying, there've been about 250 studies. There's one study within that that looked at about 488 elasticities drawn from 83 of those studies. And they found that there is an elasticity of 0.04 when it comes to advertising expenditure. So what does that 0.04 number mean? This means that if you double your advertising, your stock price would increase by 4%, based again on the study by colleagues Edeling and Fisher. In contrast, if you double your investment in brand assets, if your brand assets double, your stock price can increase to the extent of 33%. So it's 8 times as high as the effect through increasing advertising expenditures alone. So the strongest and the greatest impact in terms of sustained effect comes from building these intangible brand assets. And again, I'm going back to what Ian said earlier, which is that managers know this, analysts know this, but now there's been a systematic documentation that in fact pulling the lever on brand assets has the maximum impact, up to a 33% impact on stock price with a doubling of advertising.
That's really interesting. And I just want to sort of really nail that point. So just to, again, paraphrase what you said, advertising's biggest or most powerful contribution to stock market valuation is its ability to build brand assets. That's correct, yeah?
That is correct. Advertising's strongest impact and most sustained impact on stock prices comes through building brand assets. And that impact is 8 times as high as the impact that happens through just building immediate sales. And the challenge is really in figuring out what is the long-term impact, because it's easy to see the immediate impact through clicks, through increases in likes, through increases in engagement, for example. But the measurement of the long-term impact, which is not immediately observable, is a little more complicated than just observing immediate impact. So there are measurement challenges as well as the time frame over which the impact occurs that makes it harder to assess this impact. But in fact, that leads to the greatest return on stock price. And studies that we've looked at, Mike and I, have in fact been able to disentangle the short-term effect from the long-term effect to be able to reach these conclusions.
It doesn't seem to matter what angle we take on marketing effectiveness. We always come back to the long term and the short term. It's just seems to be built into every angle. Ian, I'm going to come to you now to talk through what you found. And I think the two sort of studies paint complementary pictures, even if they're looking at quite different things. Now, your piece, as you mentioned earlier, was really a sort of survey of equity analysts. That's right, yeah?
And investors, yes.
And investors. So just explain a little bit about that audience, you know, what, because in particularly having been an equity analyst, what's the sort of role that those that sort of audience plays in influencing things like stock market valuation?
Yeah, so actually plays a huge role. So in terms of the separation between the two, equities analysts, they're typically referred to as sell side, would be, but also as well, they can include, you know, who would mainly work for investment banks, but also as well, you can get analysts who work for investment firms as well. Their whole idea is essentially to say whether companies, you know, whether it is worth sort of buying, sort of holding or selling the shares. And they have a lot of influence in terms of the share price reactions, because yeah, if you look at what the market is looking for, it's looking for signals, it's looking for signs of whether these companies are good companies or bad companies. And analysts are seen as the ones who have the most information, who have done the most research on this. So really, they are the filters through which sort of all of the perceptions about these stocks will be seen. Now, investors are those who invest directly within those companies. And the easiest way to think of this is to imagine those investors are the bosses of the CEOs and CFOs. If CEOs and CFOs lose the confidence of investors, then what tends to happen is those management teams leave. So they have to sort of meet expectations, yeah, preferably beat expectations, but they have to make sure that investors are very much sort of aligned with what they're thinking. And then investors will often use analysts to sort of check hypotheses, to run through various scenarios. They'll run through what the analysts are saying in terms of their forecasts and their views on a particular stock as well. So this whole ecosystem, what it helps support, is really sort of information and sort of details about companies that, quite frankly, for the wider market, they wouldn't have otherwise.
And you mentioned earlier some of the findings. Just run us through the headlines of that study.
Sure. So as I mentioned at the beginning, we found that in terms of the strength of brand and marketing, yeah, it was cited as the most important of the various factors that we questioned about for analysts and investors in terms of their appraisal and analysis of companies. So 79% said that the strength of brand and marketing was an important factor, or very important, in fact, to how they looked at companies. And that was compared with 76% for leadership quality, all the way down to 62% for employee experience. Now, also as well, what was interesting was a couple of other highlights. The number of analysts who do actually look at advertising and promotion spend. Yet this survey was last done in 2005. And if you look at the figure then, it was only 6%. The figure now is 80%. So there's a lot more detail being placed on the A&P spend than there was in the past. And also as well, what you find is that for most analysts, they see advertising as an investment than a cost. So again, you look at advertising, yet 75% sort of see advertising as either an investment all the time or some of the time. So again, you've got this message which is coming across, which is saying that from a financial standpoint, they do realize the value of advertising for a company. Now, one thing that was slightly at odds with that point of view was when we asked analysts, well, how do you view cuts in marketing spend? How would they feel? Actually, 52% said they see it as a positive cost-saving measure, as opposed to 36% that would see it as a short-term fix. And I think the key reason for that really has to do with the accounting treatment of advertising at the moment. It's expense. So it's expense in the year in which it's sort of incurred. And so for many management teams, if they need to meet their financial numbers in that particular year, then the easiest line to go for is actually the advertising and promotion spend. Now, what is interesting, if you look, there has been a recent paper, consultation paper by the International Accounting Standards Board that is talking about looking at changing that definition. And if that happened, I think it'd be positive, because when we asked the analysts about IT spend, for example, which is capitalized and which arguably is even more opaque in terms of the benefits it provides, yeah, analysts actually saw cost cutting there sort of as more of a short-term fix. So I think overall, I would say the findings that we got from the survey were very, very positive in terms of how the perceptions were. But again, there is still one or two things that probably needs more work on.
Did that surprise you? Did it surprise you how positive the picture was?
I have to admit it did. Although I will admit that a point that Schubert said before, what you find is that when it comes to marketing spend, if companies cut marketing spend, it can be seen as a red flag, particularly in sectors such as the luxury sector. So what happens is that people say, okay, people are cutting their marketing spend, particularly where the brand is very important, and that must be a sign that essentially things are dire, whether from a cash flow perspective or whether from a profitability standpoint as well. I think one other thing as well is just wanted to sort of highlight as well, when Shubu was pointed out, as it were, the increased effect that you get from intangible brand building, I don't think that should come as a surprise, because what you get over the years is this compound effect that comes through. That essentially, in terms of brand advertising, it's not, many companies view it as, let's say, an additive process. So that it's 2 + 2 + 2 + 2. And if you cut, let's say, a little bit in one year, it doesn't really matter to the overall number, because yeah, it makes doesn't make a huge amount of difference. Whereas particularly when it comes to brand strength and the continual need to build on the sort of power of the brand, it's more of a multiplication effect. It's more like 2 × 2 × 2 × 2. And so if you cut by degree in 1 year, it has a ripple effect that goes all the way through. And again, I think we're starting to see some of the realization of that come through in some of the analyst investors' views that cutting marketing spend, and again, go back to the point that we said before about the last 2 years been a vast and planned experiment, the analysts and investors now are realizing, hold on a minute, if you actually cut your advertising spend, yes, you know, you can meet the numbers short term, but the longer term implications of this may be more negative than we thought.
And just a slightly technical follow-up, but we're talking about advertising, or we're using the terms advertising and marketing here, and obviously they mean different things. Is your focus, Ian, on marketing communications, or is it does it reflect marketing more generally?
I think it's probably more on the marketing communication side than anything else. Certainly when we looked at the survey, that was sort of more the focus, but also as well, it has relevance for the wider marketing landscape as well.
Yeah, because I guess one of the things equity analysts can look at is that A&P line in the which is very dominated by communication spend.
Well, one thing we did look at, we actually looked at analysts' attitudes in terms of advertising and promotion, and how they viewed advertising, how they viewed promotion. And quite frankly, what we found, there wasn't really a huge amount of difference in those who saw it as an investment. As I said, 75% for advertising, 76% when it came to promotion. The only difference that probably would highlight was that those who saw on the promotion side, those who saw the promotion as a little bit of investment, a little bit of an operating cost, that was a higher number than the more mixed view on advertising. So 38% thought it was a bit of both when it came to advertising, but 48% thought it was a bit of both when it came to promotion.
And so that is, I mean, I guess to Shuba's point earlier, we were talking about the danger of what something like Tesla has done in terms of investing in, and I'm using the term invest loosely here, investing in promotions as a potentially destructive thing, or at least a sort of neutral thing for the brand.
So I think that's right. And again, it's sort of the signal that it sends, particularly in a product where you've got something such as a Tesla, where it had a perceived value. If you look at what, for example, Mercedes and BMW did during the pandemic, what they said was the increases they were putting through for the inflationary costs that were sort of happening, as well as increased supply chain costs, they said those price increases would be premium. And so there is this signal that you send out there in terms of your price as to how valuable your good is. If you promote, the problem is yes, you may gain some market share, but you're not really building up the strength of the brand. What you're sending a signal to is to say that if times get tough, yeah, and we need to take share, we don't really have a huge amount of confidence within our brand. What we're doing is actually we need to go down the price-cutting route. And yeah, I'd entirely agree with what Shuba said on that.
Shuba, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, I just wanted to react to what Ian said about the kinds of marketing investments that have differential returns. Of these 250 studies, some of them focused on advertising expenditures. Others focused on things like customer satisfaction. So if investments that improve customer satisfaction, they have a consistent positive effect on stock returns. Other variables that seem to matter positively are things like new product introductions. Still others are product quality, investments and improvements in product quality. In contrast, Ian was talking about myopic management, where you might cut expenses to improve short-term earnings. And that, in fact, has been shown to have sort of a negative impact on stock returns. So there have been studies that have looked at these different types of variables, things like negative social media sentiment has a negative impact on stock returns. So there are some that are marketing actions that fall predominantly in the positive impact domain, things like new product introductions, investment in customer assets, equity, brand assets, some that have negative impact, like negative social media sentiment, product recall crises, cutting short-termism, for example, and still others that have mixed findings, and more research needs to be done in terms of disentangling those. R&D is an example of a variable where there are mixed findings, where some R&D actions have a positive impact, others have negative impact. So we're still sort of unpacking the various dimensions of this, and I just wanted to respond to that comment about is it always positive, is it always negative, and how does it vary depending on whether it's advertising or other marketing mix.
I want to spend some time towards the end of the podcast now on the implications for actual practitioners. And the paper from the journal had a really interesting statement in it. It states that marketers should incorporate investor behavior in their advertising spending decisions. I just wanted to unpack what that actually means in practice. I mean, Mike, do you want to sort of explain a bit more there?
Sure, I'm happy to do this. Yes, so the incorporation of investor expectations, for the most part, flows from the fact that your marketing or advertising, in this case, has positive consumer reaction. Brand strength goes up, sales go up, etc. Because those are the ones where the investors actually follow the market, so to speak, or the consumer market, or as we like to say in the U.S., Wall Street is in sync with Main Street. And fortunately, for the most part, that happens. But there are some remarkable exceptions. And the one big exception has already been mentioned a couple of times, that consumers love price promotions and investors don't. So those two actually have opposite effects. And so that is one where you really want to be careful. I do appreciate that companies from time to time have to promote to get rid of last year's inventory or for some other reasons to keep the trade happy. But it does have that negative effect if it's done extensively on firm value. Now, in general, I would say look for those metrics that we know are actually seen by investors. Investors see more, and Ian has already illustrated that very nicely. They see more than just the short-term profit or cash flow variations. Product innovation, for example. It's been shown that if you launch a new product and you add significant advertising to that, which you don't have to do because it's risky, it's a new product, and you advertise, you're actually sending a signal to the market that you really believe in this, and it has a positive impact. Okay, but now we're talking about basically new product strategy together with advertising strategy. Another one, and Shubha briefly mentioned it, is the notion of customer satisfaction. And that is so important. And yes, it is being tracked. And yes, investors do take notice. In fact, when Shubha earlier made the summary that the elasticity of brand strength on firm value is about 0.33, I think you remember that, there is one metric that is actually higher than that. And that is customer strength, customer relationships. Okay, that elasticity is about 0.7. Okay, so if the strength of your customer relationship, like your customer retention, for example, goes up by 10%, your stock price goes up by 7%. That's even stronger than brand. Okay, of course you can argue, well, a good brand will serve customer retention, absolutely. So one could be built into the other, but there's more than that. And we are seeing more and more that these long-term relationship building aspects are absolutely crucial for our firms. And there are metrics for us to take a look at. I personally love looking at retention statistics, or let's say for example, cell phone carriers. You can see so many new customers and so many switched versus someone did not switch. Those are very, very important metrics that show the future health of the company. And yes, the investment company, the investment sector does take notice of that. And then the other one, and I will punt to some new work by Shubha on this, is to try to look at some actually investor sentiment data. That's a relatively new area. We know a lot about brand sentiment. We don't know that much about investor sentiment. And I know some new research that Shubha is involved in is looking at that as well. So in other words, we do have several metrics. We know which ones are the important ones. So it actually is a relatively clear roadmap, I think, for our marketers to follow when they make their allocation decisions.
Ian, like, we often hear the marketing budgets are under pressure in the current environment. How can we use what you've learned to support marketers in their discussions with either the CEO or the CFO or other members of the C-suite?
People have to understand what are the priorities of companies, what are the priorities of boards when they relate to what they're doing in advertising and promotion. How is it that essentially boards, putting it in a language that boards will say, okay, we get this, we understand why this is so important to the overall long-term value of the company, and showing why that you can't cut advertising spend when there is a temptation amongst many boards in order to do so. I mean, one of the phrases that I've used for a long time now is that I see advertising as intangible capex. And just as firms would build physical plants such as car factories, let's say in the automobile sector, because they realize they need to invest in order to grow for the long term, and it's a long-term investment, that's the same sort of thing when it comes to advertising. Yeah, it needs to be invested in, and it needs to be sort of done constantly in order to produce that long-term value. So I think there's a lot that advertising and marketers can do. There's a question mark of grasping, as it were, the broader concepts and then bringing it down to the step-by-step nature of how they explain that to their boards and management teams. And I would also as well just point out the thing that I said before. This is the best time to be making this argument because of what's happened over the past 2 years in terms of how managements have recognized that brand strength has contributed to the overall value of their companies at the bottom line, both in terms of margins and also as well in terms of the top line, and then how that has translated into share price growth.
And Shubha, I'm just going to finish with you. We talk a lot at Walk and in the marketing world in general about effectiveness, and we have effectiveness awards. Do we need to change the way we think about marketing effectiveness? I'm talking about marketing as well as advertising effectiveness in light of the sort of findings we've been talking about today.
Thank you, David. That's an important question. I think we really need to go beyond the short-term metrics. We're really good at measuring things like clicks, likes, immediate sales, but we need to go beyond that to look at the things we've been talking about, things like brand equity growth, how does advertising enhance customer loyalty, how does advertising improve our future growth and profitability. And importantly, we need to incorporate investor expectations. We've done a really good job of understanding consumer sentiment, but what these studies have shown is that investor sentiment is important as well in understanding how the stock price might change. So what we are doing at the Questrom School of Business, Institute for Business Markets and Society, is to come up with a measure of investor sentiment. So for example, think of a concept like AI. Consumers might have a negative sentiment towards AI because perhaps it is affecting their privacy. Concerns about privacy might affect consumers negatively, but investors might value it because of efficiency gains and productivity gains. So we are coming up with a way to look at sentiment of investors towards various constructs. Do investors have a negative sentiment? Do they have a positive sentiment? Do they have a neutral sentiment? And we are using AI with human in the loop and large language models to figure out a way to get at investor sentiment in a real-time sense. So what we can do is, in addition to incorporating consumer reactions to advertising, we could also incorporate investor sentiment in the models and improve on the way we assess and incorporate investor sentiment. So yes, effectiveness should incorporate long-term metrics, and it should incorporate investors in addition to consumers, who we really have a good job, have done a good job at understanding.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. So thank you so much, Shubha, Mike, and Ian. The Journal of Advertising Research paper I mentioned is on Walk, as is a write-up of Ian's talk at the IPA's FWorks conference last year, where he revealed a lot of that data. Now, if you like what you've heard, then please do follow the Walk podcast on your podcasting platform of choice. And if you really like what you heard, then do leave us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening. Thank you.